Hi, everybody. My name's Ethel, and I'm an alcoholic, and I am a product of being the age I am and coming into AA when I did. So that's what you will hear. Not an expert on anything except trying to live the life that I have learned to live, and the life that I'm very happy that I have now, and that I feel was given to me, really, not one that I necessarily earned or one that I necessarily did a whole lot of working for, but one that was really has been like a gift for me. And I say that because I was born in the Depression, 1933. And believe you me, my mother and father didn't have jobs. And so I was born in an aunt's home. They had to travel to her home so I could be born there, and because they couldn't afford hospital or anything like that. So, and then so they came back to Philadelphia. It was in Virginia, where I was born. They came back to Philadelphia, got jobs, and I joined them when I was about 3 years old. So, that's kind of, I always keep in mind that, in a sense, that disorientation of being born somewhere and, then having to go 3 years without my parents being there and then reuniting with my parents, whom I really did not know. I won't say that, that caused my drinking, but I can say that there were issues that I had to come to grips with and that I had to resolve as time went on. I started drinking very young, about 11 years old, and because when I discovered that the taste of a drink gave a certain illumination to life around me, to me, I began to feel this is worth living for, and so it became kind of a goal, you might say, to each day, or whenever I could have access to have a drink, and at least once a day anyway. But of course, when you're 11 years old, you don't have that kind of access. So time goes on. But the thing is, by the time I was in high school, I had found ways of making friends with folks who were much older. I was a church girl. I sang. I loved music. And so I found ways of making friends with folks who liked to drink. And so I, of course, those were my friends. Now, the thing that I always that impressed me about AA was when I came in. There were, all these slogans around the wall, and one of them was think. And, I felt at that time when I came to AA, I was when I came seriously to AA, I came one time and I wasn't serious, went back out. But when I came to AA seriously and stayed, I was 21 years old. And at that time, it was, mostly men in the group. There were two women. And there were these slogans. And I thought, look at all this corny stuff on the wall. Who wants to read that? Who cares about that? My concern was my life was unmanageable. I wanted a problem solver. I was somebody to help solve my problems. That's what all I was looking for. I wasn't looking for anything else. But when I saw that sign, think, it struck me because, as I say, I thought of myself as a thinker. And I thought of myself as a person who was able to think rationally, even though if you knew me, you would say I was probably one of the most irrational people that you had met, because my thinking was always, it seemed, contrary to m what most people were thinking and doing. And of course, I put that to the fact that, I'm a musician. I like music. And I like the clubs. And I like the reason I like going to the clubs and sitting there is because at that time, and this was back in the early, late 40s, early 50s, there were dynamic musicians, world-known musicians, renowned musicians who came to small clubs in the neighborhoods, because many of the venues were the only places they could get jobs and be paid. And so I got to hear people like Ella Fitzgerald and Nat King Cole and Art Tatum and Oscar Peterson, people who were giants in the field of music, Sarah Vaughan and folks like that. And in person, up close and personal, because those clubs were small, intimate, you might say, but they were great. And I heard great music and I loved it. So to me, that was, the great part about it. Of course, the downside of it was that being in a club, they expected you to drink. There was usually a cover charge or at least a minimum. So you had to, order something. And it wasn't until after I came into AA that somebody said, well, it's stupid to kind of go in a club and pay that kind of money for a ginger ale. Why would you do that? So you really need to. And I didn't like the fact that they were saying, I shouldn't go into the clubs. That's where the music is. That's where those people are that play the music that I want to hear in person. I mean, sure, I could buy the records and I have the records, but hearing the music, it was the beat that kept my life going. And that's why I felt that my thinking was not in tune with most people, because they just didn't see things the way I saw them. They didn't see life the way I saw it, life. And as I saw life, it was to be lived with the background of music playing all the time and being able to step out and, just do your thing, whatever it was, to the music. So you might say, okay, that's not life. That's not the way life is lived. That's your so to me, that was your opinion, and you were just part of the normal schlubs that, had life. I didn't have life really. My life was unmanageable. I had a job which expected me to be there every day, and I was not always there every day. I wasn't always there on time. I wasn't dependable. And when I did get there, I felt I was one of the best workers in the place. That's what I thought. And part of my irrational thinking. But that was the way that life was for me. But AA began to bring me face to face with some things that were quite, you might say, brought me up short. And one of the things was my behavior and the fact that I always had to make excuses for what I thought, what I did, how I acted, for my undependability, for my rudeness to people, for my antisocial actions and words. It always seemed that I had to make excuses. I wasn't going to apologize. I wasn't going to say I was sorry, but I would try to make an excuse. I would try to rationalize what was going on with me. And usually it was because there was something wrong with you. That was the way I thought about it. But AA kind of began to expose the guilt. It exposed the shame that I felt because I knew that my behavior was having an effect on my family, my mother, my grandmother, my brother, my aunts, people who loved, I guess they loved me. I thought at the time I wasn't sure. But of course, they were horrified most of the time at my actions, except, of course, when I was performing. I performed, I sang, and my grandmother used to say, outside, you're like an angel. In the house, you're like a hellion. And I guess that was there became the crux of my feeling that, this family is unmanageable. I can't manage my life living with this family, so which was the only family I had. So, but I couldn't move because my habit kept me from keeping enough money from my job to pay rent someplace else. So the reality was that I was constantly in conflict with their values and mine. Now, as I say, when I finally came to AA seriously at the age of 21, having felt that, I should be free to do what I wanted to do, to live like I wanted to live. And here I was faced with this program that talked about sobriety one day at a time. And I asked them, does that mean I can't drink for the rest of my life? And of course, the answer was, we don't try to predict or tell you what to do the rest of your life. What we're telling you is that one day at a time, if you stay away from the first drink, you might be able to do something about the unmanageability in your life. If you might be able to come to some sort of sanity through a higher power, you might be able to turn your will, your life over to the care of God as you understand Him. You might be able to try to find a God of your understanding that you can turn your life over to. And I can't say that all of that thrilled me to hear all of that, or that it enthused me about AA, or that it made me feel I'm in the right place. It just made me feel that, oh my God, I don't really want to have to do all of this. It spelled, there were overtones of responsibility, and I didn't want responsibility. There were overtones of accountability, and I didn't want to be held accountable. There were overtones of, you are now in a place where if you are willing to be honest, which I had not been, if you're willing to be open, which I was not really willing, if you're willing, if you're absolutely, if you can't do any of that, maybe if you can just stay sober one day at a time, you might be able to, your mind might begin to follow what your body is trying to do. And so I had to confess that, sure enough, as I stayed sober, I began to understand a little more. And even though I was reluctant about approaching those steps, I began to see the good that they could do. I began to see, yes, there is a solution here. In the big book, there is this chapter that I have really come to love, and it's called "There Is a Solution to This Common Problem." Now, I know that there are people who have found so many other solutions, they feel, to this problem, which is fine because, as I heard a guy say in the meeting the other night, what works for you works for you. What works for me. So, but what AA taught me was to share what works for me. And so that has been really a wonderful revelation that if I can begin to think rationally, if I can begin to stabilize my life and my thinking, there might be something here worthwhile to share with people who still suffer. But first, there are some things that I needed to do. And of course, it took, as I say, I really sometimes it just boggles my mind when I think back to how long it really took me to come around. And of course, I say to people now, I'm slow because I'm old, but I was young then, and I was still slow. I was slow because I was unwilling. The unwillingness was an obstacle to my making progress in my sobriety. And it was really interesting that at first I approached the steps on a piecemeal basis, which they said, well, as long as you stay sober and you're doing something. And so I said, okay, I can, first step, I can, I'm powerless. Okay, I got that over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. But now don't apply that powerlessness too far. Don't let it go too far. I don't want to stretch this powerlessness out to include too many other things, even though the reality is I'm powerless over pretty much everything outside of me. I'm powerless over other people and, other things that happen. But still, I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm willing to accept that. That's all I need to do. Understand, accept it, surrender to it, and move on and see if I cannot achieve some measure of sanity through this God, this higher power, which at first for me was the group, because I was really sure that because of all of the foolishness I had been a part of as a church person and a choir singer and all of that, I was pretty sure God was disgusted with me. So I didn't want to really deal with any of that. But it was interesting that the higher power became my the group and certain individuals. I said, I'm willing to serve. If you tell me what to do, I'm willing to do it. I was willing to go out on 12-step calls, and we did a lot of that. We went to a lot of institutions, and to prisons, to hospitals, to psychiatric wards. There were lots of places that we went, carried the message, and that made me realize that what but for the grace of God meant, because I knew when I looked another across the table in a meeting and saw a gal sitting in a prison uniform, that that could have been me sitting there, that they could have been bringing me a meeting. And when I sat down at hospital that's now closed, a psychiatric hospital by Barry, and in a meeting, and looked at a woman sitting across from me who was committed there. I knew that could have been me also, realistically, because the insanity was not just relegated to any one person. It was free will, if you will. So it really began to dawn on me that there is a utility that these steps have for a life like mine, that I have to apply myself to these with these steps. The other thing that occurred to me was that I was in a group, and I really feel fortunate that made use of the program as a whole, the traditions, the concept, service, all of this was important to this group. And it made us a cohesive group that could accomplish a lot. We traveled a lot. We went to New York. We went to Delaware. We went to New Jersey. We went to Washington. We went to many other states because, as a group, we were able to function cohesively under the umbrella of those traditions. Those traditions kept us from flying apart and having everybody's special thing be the thing that could tear our group apart. And believe you me, as it says in the big book, we were a group that did not like to mix. I was never a mixer. I always felt that I was not part of any group, really. And that was a big thing, as I say, part of my thinking, that if you're an individual and you're just doing your thing, you are not re really responsible for all this other stuff. But it became apparent that in this group, where we had to carry a message, that cohesiveness was necessary. Our unity, our sobriety depended on our unity. And I loved that when I saw it in action. In action was taking it out and trying to help some others who needed help, who asked for help. We were part of an intergroup, if you will, that requested services, and we were happy to provide those services. It really became a matter of understanding that life is built not just on my own selfish wants and desires, but that in fact, as a part of a whole that is going to accomplish a common good, there is a way to do that. There is, as the book says, a solution for that splinterness, that divisiveness. I have always been amazed, and I am especially amazed now in this age where everybody's on Zoom and attend to attend. Well, most people, some people are still attending meetings in person, but the fact that we are now on Zoom is to me a wonderful phenomenon because it, to me, exemplifies the bridges that AA has been able to build, that we can bridge so many gaps. And Zoom has really bridged a lot of gaps in this program. And it has really, helped countless people. So the fact that people can continue to maintain daily sobriety, through a program, this program, the program that gives steps to take to live an unbelievable life, and then traditions to do this in concert with others who are also striving to do the same thing, but may not have the same mindset that I have. I can do this because we have something that guides all of us and keeps us in concert. And of course, I always think of music, everything that I do. I still am involved in music, and I'm still trying to sing with whatever God has left me of this voice. But I'm fortunate that there are still some people who, it was funny because when I came to AA, I thought my voice was gone. I thought my singing days were over. And because between the smoking and the drinking, my vocal cords had started to suffer and, cause all kinds of issues. But sobriety made me understand there are doctors for that. And there are ways, there are coaches, there are people who can help you with that. But you have to be sober. You have to not be doing what you, when I used to be out, I was on tour one time with choir, and I had gotten had too much to drink and stayed up too late and had a concert the next day. Nobody could hear a word I said because my throat absolutely shut down. I had laryngitis like nothing you ever heard. And I was frightened to death because I knew that my choir director was going to be furious with me and upset with me. And of course, what do you do when you're an alcoholic? You find, oh, try this, try that, try rye, try bourbon, try this, let it slip down your throat slowly with a little bit of lemon in it. Listen, trust me, none of it worked. When I got to the concert, I still couldn't get a sound out. And of course, I had to pay the consequences for that. But coming into AA after I got sober and I started going to coaches and who helped me to revitalize my vocal cords, I began to sing again, literally. And I feel like my whole life now is a song. I'm really living the song that I sang. And it just, I can't tell you how beautiful that is for me because it gives me a way not only of, I mean, even if nobody else likes my singing but me, I enjoy it. I am having fun with it. I am living, as I say, the life beyond my wildest dreams. And it really, to think that I was able to learn how to live and let live in all the areas of my life so that I don't have to get stressed out about what anybody does. If as Brandon's granddad used to say, if my kids are walking backwards, I don't have to care. There's nothing, I'm powerless over that, right? They are grown. If they walk backwards, I can keep walking forward and hope they'll catch up with me. And as a matter of fact, I'm grateful to say my kids have not only caught up with me, they have passed me. They are way beyond anything that I could have ever done in life. And I'm grateful for that. And I attribute all of that to the program, to the people in the program who love my kids growing up. Let them grow up knowing them, nurturing them when I couldn't, when I was, because listen, sobriety didn't give me all the whatever it was I needed to be a parent because I had really At first, I had no clue. Then it began to be, well, hey, there's somebody out here who are doing such a good job, and I love to let them come in and they can help me out. And they did. They absolutely did. So I attribute the great life my kids are doing, not to me, but to this program and to the fact that the principles in this program work. Not just for alcoholics, but for anybody who is willing to listen and who wants to have a life that is productive and that is positive and that is free of so much of the negativity around us. So of course, it's not that terrible things don't happen. That's not what we're talking about. Terrible things. What was the book? Bad things happen to good people, right? So it just becomes a thing of instead of me running around like that other book said, asking who moved my cheese, I don't have to worry about that. Nobody moved my cheese. I have to be the one to step at a time, take a step at a time, and figure it out. And with the help of my higher power, who has restored me to sanity, who through whom my recovery is becoming an absolute joy to me. And fortunately, I can say even there are a couple of other people in the world who are glad that I'm alive. So it is really a blessing that this program provides for us. I don't really feel that there is a need to restrict what we do to any particular form or fashion, but what we have is a format that is flexible, that's organic, and that lives as we live it. So we become, of course, the way that we live, the way that we think, and we're doing as our thinking, guides us. I'm just so grateful, grateful, grateful that what rationality I have today is as a result of the guidance of a program that showed me these are the steps we took. And the steps that we took are guides to life. So I am so grateful for that. And I am just finished. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Ethel. Wow. Yes, I got to hear some more stuff that I didn't know. So anybody that came a little late, our speaker today was Ethel N from Philadelphia, PA. And she never told us her sober date or how long she's been here. I think people would like to know that too. So can you tell us, please?
Well, I've been around for 68 years. In June, it'll be 69. And that's why I have so much gratitude and why I can feel so strongly about this program.